I met him years and years ago. I was friends with his grandson, and his grandson first told me that Bob had rode a dory from Sitka down to Tacoma, and I remember meeting him. I remember meeting him when he was still over in Juneau, and Dale was working over there. And but then I got to know him better when he was in the Pioneer Home. I had a book in mind about the tides along the inlet and making the trip up from the Pacific Northwest to Sitka in a small boat. And I remembered about Bob's experience. And I love the era of the early 20th century, particularly between 1919 and right before the Second World War. I've always, for a long time now, I've been interested in the labor movement and the development of Alaska into sort of the industrial workers' age, with mining and logging and fishing, and so I went to Bob for details, and he had an amazing memory right up till just the last couple of years when his memory started to slip. He had a memory for historical detail and facts about Alaska that was just incredible. I remember doing research on microfiche and microfilm over at the SJ Library and the library here, and bringing him articles. And he was 94 when I was doing this research, I think. And I would show him articles, and he'd say, "Well, that's pretty good, but the heading on this photograph, the caption for the photograph, is wrong." And I would sort of humor him, and I'd think, "Well, we'll see." And every single time he was correct, the more I would dig into something. He knew Alaskan history like no one else, particularly Southeastern history. He was a great resource to talk with when in trying to write a story, because, you know, I can do research about fashions and, you know, I can look at old catalogs to see what men and women were wearing. But questions of culture, of time, like I would ask him, okay, so a woman in that area was going out in a boat. What would she wear in that in 1933? What kind of clothes would she be wearing? And we would have discussions about it. And also I'd ask him about cursing and things like that, which are hard things to track down. And he was very blunt and very honest about it. And I'd say, you know, I mean, tell me about how people cursed and stuff back then. And he was a genuine treasure of memory and insight and detail. You know, he was great. He was great fun. And I think he did read it, because when I came back to see him, he said, "Well, it's very interesting. Of course, you know, it's fiction, so you don't have to worry too much." But he said, "I'm wondering why you misspelled the name of the steamship." You know, and I'd say, "Oh, well, I didn't know I had." And then he said, "You know, the steamship, in the book, I think I had the Estabeth being the steamship." And he said, "You know, I think you need this other steamship, because the dining room that you're describing doesn't really fit the dining room in the Estabeth." And, you know, it was great to know. And, you know, he knew so much about those ships. He had traveled back and forth on those ships as a young man. And it was years ago when you could work off your ticket to Seattle by working in the kitchen on the steamships. And usually it was washing dishes. And he did that several times, where you could get a trip to Seattle if you just wash dishes on the boat. And years ago, a diver came to Bob and was saying that he had found a midden of old crockery, of dishes that had come from the steamship, but they were in a strange pattern on the bottom in Juneau, that some were about 40, 35 feet away from the dock, and some were right next to the dock. And he said, you know, he didn't understand why these dishes were like that. And Bob said, well, that's easy, because when these kids were washing dishes, they, you know, there were several hundred people sometimes on the boat, crew and passengers, and they would wash dishes, and they would just come down this chute, and there was a place where you just scrape the plates of food off in a chute that went down over the side. And he said, if the dishes kept piling up and it was taking too long and you got like something with cold eggs on it, you just threw the plate over the side and it would go down the chute and off. And it depended on which way the boat was tied to the dock, where the chute would just dump the plates out. And that was a great example of how experience, can almost always heighten scholarship. And Bob was an amazing scholar as well, but his real gift to me was that he had lived it and experienced the era that I was interested in. Well, I just accepted that my book wouldn't be as good as his. You know, it wouldn't, you know, so on. That's the kind of thing that it's easy for me to do, is that I've had enough experience with writer's block to know that if you worry that your writing isn't going to be as good as someone else's, then you'd never write a word. And so I knew that my book wouldn't have the detail and wouldn't have the thing that I also very much admire about Bob's book. Is the humility that he wrote. There's not a bit of bragging in that book, or there's a thing that you see in so much contemporary adventure fiction, sort of a mystical transformation or inward journey, you know. He just did it, and he just did it, and it was like, oh yeah, lots of people did it, and, you know. But this, when he did this, this is a young man that had a bullet in his leg, and he rode one to get across Dixon Entrance, I believe. He rode 27 hours straight. He gained 45 pounds of muscle weight in the trip down there, and it was just matter of fact to him. And his book is brief. And it just gives these amazing little pictures of that era. And I've said it in the dedication to Bob. I dedicated my book, The Big Both Ways, to Bob, is that he opened windows to the past that will stay open forever. As long as people are interested in the Alaska story, they'll be able to go to Bob DeArmond's writing and look through those windows and see what the world was like. And they'll know that it was accurately rendered. You know, that's the big difference between somebody like DeArmond and other people that write oral histories. His will be dead on accurate. Now, you know, he wasn't a perfect human being. He was a man of his era and he had his flaws, but he was just a tremendous gift to Alaskan letters.